Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Mr. Gandhi. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chokshur Unmilitang Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Sharashate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunnavadi Paschatta Deshatarine. Knowledge is a matter of receiving information. We receive information and we retain those information, and that becomes knowledge. In the material nature means the nature that is perceivable with our senses. This information about this nature is rather easily available, because things that we can see, things that we can touch, things that we can hear, things that are tangible to our senses, we can receive informations about them quite easily. But beyond this material nature, there is another reality, and that is the spiritual reality. Unfortunately, today's world, which is very much motivated by materialism, the informations or quest about spiritual reality is lacking miserably. But the Vedic culture is actually based on the informations about spiritual reality. The Vedas are describing that the human beings have a very important responsibility to understand about the spiritual reality. Rather, very strongly Vedas are pointing out that unless and until one comes to that spiritual quest, unless and until one begins that spiritual quest, one is not really considered a full-fledged human being. They are human beings by appearance and by other considerations, but the real platform of human beings, or real human platform, is to come to the platform of understanding the spiritual reality. Like, unless and until one comes to the spiritual platform, what is one's general tendency? The general tendency we notice of a human being is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Now, these four activities or these four propensities have been considered to be the animalistic propensities, in the sense the animals also have these propensities. An animal also is interested in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Now, should a human being remain in the animal platform or transcend the animal platform? And the sign of transcending that animal platform is to come to the platform of questioning, who am I? Where did I come from? And what is the purpose of my existence? Now, these three questions are known as Brahma Jigyasa. Brahma means the spiritual reality, and Jigyasa means question. The questions about one's spiritual identity. Who am I? Now, only a human being can question this. or come up with this question, who am I? An animal all cannot question, who am I? But a human being can. And I'm confident that at some point in his life, every single human being comes up with this question. Who am I? And where did I come from? Now, the question, who am I, leads to the point that I am not this body, I am not material. My real identity is spiritual. And where did I come from? And what am I supposed to do with my life? Now, to come to the question may be there, but to get the answer, we have to approach a person who has the information. For example, when we want to become a doctor, we have to study under somebody who knows the science, medical science. When we want to become a doctor, we don't go to a physicist, right? Or if we want to learn drama, we don't go to a poet. We have to approach the person who has the proper information. So, and this personality who can provide the information about the spiritual reality is called a spiritual master. Or a teacher who can give information about spiritual life. Now here I will take the time to delve a little bit about the consideration of or the importance of spiritual quest. You see, everybody can recognize his material identity, his body, his parentage, his nationality, his other material identifications. But when we think about it deeply, then we can see that these material identifications are transient. They're changing all the time. Like, for example, our bodies are changing. We may identify ourselves with the bodies, but we can see very clearly that these bodies are changing. Like, for example, there was a time when we had a baby body. Then the body changed into a young boy's body or a girl's body. And then it will grow to become old. Now, although the body is changing, but our real identity remains constant. Our real identity doesn't change. That is, I, the concept of I that I am, that doesn't change. So in this way we can see that although our material identity changes, but our real identity remains the same. Now, it's interesting to note that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is actually making this point at the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is telling Arjun, when Arjun refused to fight, Krishna is actually pointing out that your concept that you are going to kill your relatives and friends is only a material concept. But the actual identity of an individual is spiritual. And he made that point that dehinoshmin jatha dehe kaumaram jovanam jara tatha dehantara prapti dhirastatra namuhyati. He says that the body goes through the changes of kaumaram jovanam jara, childhood to boyhood to old age, to youth to old age. Kaumaram jovanam jara. And he is saying tatha dehantara prapti. Just as in spite of the change of the body, our real identity doesn't change, we remain the same. Similarly, when we give up this body altogether at death, still our identity will not cease to exist. We will continue to exist. How? In another new body. Dehantara. Dehantara means transmigration of the soul from one body to another body. Now, these informations are available in the Vedas. So the point is that if we want to receive spiritual information, we must find a teacher. who has the informations about this subject. Now, personally, I can tell you about my own quest. Like, there was a time, as Mr. Gandhi, while introducing, just mentioned, that I actually became interested about spiritual life when I was away from India. I was in Europe. I was in Germany. And there I noticed that the first thing I noticed that they had a lot of misconceptions about India. The Europeans, especially, like I was in Germany, so there people had a misconception that India is an extremely poverty-stricken country, underdeveloped country, where people are dying of starvation. And I used to protest. I used to say, no, that's not true. I have been born and brought up in India and I haven't seen a single person dying of starvation. Rather, I have seen that, yes, poverty is there, but in spite of the poverty, no one is actually starving. And another thing I noted, I also used to protest, is that India is not a poor country. If India was a poor country, then the British wouldn't have gone and colonialized India. Rather, India was the crest jewel of British dynasty. And England became rich by stealing the wealth from India. Anyway, let's not get into that. But I'm just talking about my thoughts at that time. And that actually pushed me into probing into the Indian, India's cultural wealth, India's philosophical and spiritual wealth. I was not so much concerned about spiritual as such, but more than that, it was the quest for or the appreciation for India's culture and heritage. Because at least being brought up in Indian culture, I knew how profound and how sublime that culture was. And so that forced me, or that kind of led me, into appreciating the India's heritage and culture and philosophy, which gradually led to the spiritual understanding. And then I realized that why should I waste my time in the West? Let me go back to India, because the real wealth is there. Now, when I went back to India, at least one understanding was very clear in my mind, that when I go back to India, I'll have to find a guru to whom I have to surrender myself wholeheartedly, completely. And the quest started. Actually, I was so keen with this persuasion that I landed in Delhi, and from Delhi I went straight to Haridwar and Rishikesh. I didn't even go home, which is Calcutta. And then the search started in that way, and I kept on searching because I had to find the person to whom I could completely surrender. At that time, I'll honestly admit, I was not really aware of the fact that the spiritual master be well informed or must be steeped in spiritual realization. But I was actually thinking about a personality who to whom I could wholeheartedly surrender myself, offer myself. And then finally I came across a book by Srila Prabhupada. At that time, of course, in the West, I was aware of Srila Prabhupada. In 1970, I came across ISKCON devotees. But I'll honestly admit, at that time, I did not think of joining the Hare Krishna movement. I mean, that was the remotest idea in my mind. But in India, when I got that book and I started to read it, then I realized that this is the real spiritual information. And then I went to the ISKCON temple and inquired about Srila Prabhupada, and I was told that Srila Prabhupada was in America at that time. So anyway, I waited, and when Srila Prabhupada came, he immediately accepted me and allowed me very mercifully to stay with him and serve him directly. And from that connection, whatever little informations I have today, I received. Now, the first and foremost thing that actually affected me is that the spiritual information cannot be received from any other source than a spiritual. So that is why the teacher is called spiritual master. One should not approach a spiritual master for any material reason. One must approach him for spiritual purpose. And Srila Prabhupada made that point very, very clear. And I also noticed that Srila Prabhupada presented the Vedic philosophy in such a way that it covered from very basics to the highest. Like a teacher who is really qualified can teach a primary school children. At the same time, he can also teach a PhD. Because he has the information, that's why he can present it in such a way that one can very easily receive it. When he goes to a primary school, he presents it in a way that the primary school children can understand. And when he goes to a PhD, he presents it in such a way that he can understand. So that is the qualification of a real spiritual teacher or a spiritual master. And what does the spiritual master do? He does not concoct certain ideas. He presents the information from the authoritative source, that is the scriptures. Just like as I gave the example previously, if one wants to become a doctor, he goes to a doctor, physician, to study, or under his guidance he studies. Now, how does the proper physician teaches his students? From the books. He does not concoct certain ideas himself. He presents it from his books. And from the books, what is presented is approved by the other practitioners as well. So similarly, in spiritual life, the spiritual teacher provides information from the authoritative scriptures. Like when it comes to the Sanatan Dharma or spiritual culture of India, then the books are the Vedas. And the essence of the Vedas are Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. It's also very interesting to note that the seers of the past, especially Vasudev, seeing the advent of the age of Kali when people will be short-lived and weak-minded, feeble intelligence and short memory. Seeing their deficiency, he presented the Vedic wisdom in such a way that they could understand it, they could grasp it. And that's why he divided the Vedas into four. Then he wrote the Upanishads. He divided them in Puranas, then he wrote Itihas, that is Mahabharata, and finally he gave the Vedanta Sutra. And then, after compiling Vedanta Sutra, Vasudev, under the direction of his spiritual master, Narad Muni, he presented the summary or the Bhashya commentary of the Vedanta Sutra in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. That is one essence of the Vedas. And the other essence of the Vedas is Krishna himself presented the Vedas in the form of Bhagavad Gita. Like Sarva Upanishado Gavo, it has been described as Gita Mahatmya, that all the Upanishads have been compared to a cow. Sarva Upanishado Gavo Dogdha Gopala Nandana. And the cowherd boy, Gopal, Krishna, milked the cow. the cow gave the milk for the sake of Vatsya, the calf, Arjun. And Dugdhang Gitamritam Mahat. Those who are wise, Sudhi, those who are really intelligent, they drink this milk from this, the nectarian milk of Upanishad. So we can see that Upanishad has been summarized in the form of Bhagavad Gita, and all the Puranas have been summarized in the form of Bhagavad Puran. Therefore, these two scriptures are most essential for the spiritual progress of this age. And a qualified teacher of the Vedas will present the teachings of the Vedas in the form of these two. So a qualified teacher must present from the scriptures of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Now we are here to attend the Dharma conference, and that's why it is important to understand that this is actually Dharma. Dharma is the words or the understanding that has been given by the Lord Himself. Dharmam tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. Dharma is given by the Lord Himself. Dharma is not a man's concocted ideas. Just as in the United States, the law is made by the government. Just any ordinary person cannot make the law. Similarly, in the kingdom of God, the laws are given by the Lord Himself. And that is called dharma. And what does it teach? This dharma has different aspects. One is naimittik dharma, and the other is nitya dharma. Nimittya means or medium. Like for example, we are spirit souls, we are spiritual beings, but we are here through this body. So this body is a nimittya, the means with which the soul is present here. Now this body's dharma changes. Like when we are born in a Hindu family, we are Hindus. When one is born in a Muslim family, he is a Muslim. Because the body is born in the family, he develops his dharma. Now these dharmas change. Like today one is Hindu, tomorrow he may be born in a Christian family. Or somebody who is a Muslim can be born in a Jewish family. Because the transmigration of the soul is a accepted fact. So as the soul changes his body, the dharma may change. Similarly, if somebody becomes, somebody is born in an animal species, then he will have his specific dharma. Like the dharma of a tiger is in a certain way, and the dharma of a cow is another way. So these dharmas change. They are known as naimittik dharma. But the nitya dharma means the eternal dharma. That doesn't change. And that is the dharma of the soul. The soul is eternal, the dharma of the soul also is eternal. And what is that dharma? What is that characteristic of the soul, or the inherent quality of the soul? The inherent quality of the soul is to love God. Therefore, dharma teaches us who God is. Can you think of, if we just simply translate the word dharma as religion, can you think of any religion without God? No. Every religion is giving us information about God and showing us the way to God. So that's why it is dharma. That's why it's a religion. And in the ultimate consideration, the dharma of a spirit soul is to love God. And that is why the spiritual master, the spiritual teacher, the ideal spiritual teacher, teaches his followers who God is and how to approach Him. And that is the sum and substance of the teaching, and it begins from there. But ultimately it ends in establishing a tangible relationship with God. Because every living entity has a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In general, we describe that God is the Supreme Father. He is the dearmost friend. Like in Christianity, it's very boldly declared, our God the Father. Love thy Father, Lord the God, with all thy heart and soul. Similarly, in our Vedic scriptures, relationship with God has been very, very precisely described. Like Shurhidam Sarva Bhutanam Gyatva Mang Shanti Mrityati. The Lord has been described as the Shurhid, the dearmost friend of all living entities. Sarva Bhutanam, all living entities. Not that He is the friend of only human beings. He is friend of every living entity. Shurhidam Sarva Bhutanam and Gyatva Mang Shanti Mrityati. When one recognizes that relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then only He becomes situated in absolute peace and finds the meaning of His life. Gyatva Mang Shanti Mrityati. So this is the essential teaching of a spiritual master. He guides him with the information. The first information that he provides is that beyond this material nature, there is a spiritual reality. Like, unless and until one accepts that fact, there is no question of making spiritual advancement. And we see that, like, if we consider different objects in this room, there are chairs, there's table, the wall, the lamps, now these are all inert, whereas we all are conscious, we all are living. Now what's the difference between a table and me? The table is inert, but I am conscious. Now what causes my consciousness? Now let us consider, if I'm talking now to you, and you at the back of your mind you're thinking that Swamiji is here, he's talking to us. Now if I drop dead, my body will be lying here, but you will say that he is gone. Now who is he that is gone? My body is lying here, but why do you say that he is gone? And if that is the fact, then who is that he that is gone, that caused the body to die? That is the soul. And it is the presence of the soul that causes our body to become alive. So in this way we can very clearly and very easily understand that there is a difference between matter and spirit. Beyond this matter there is a spirit soul. And the spirit soul comes from the spiritual identity, from the spiritual realm, from the spiritual world. And that is the real reality. That is the absolute reality. The material nature is a reflected reality. This is the reflection of the spiritual world. And the real reality is the spiritual reality. And we all came from there. And we are sustaining this material nature. Because we are here, the material nature is manifest. Anyway, that is another area. I don't want to delve into that. But the point that I'm making is the first thing that a spiritual teacher, a qualified spiritual teacher, makes us understand is that there are two things existing side by side in this material nature. One is material and the other is spiritual. Matter and spirit soul. And the spirit soul belongs to the spiritual reality, and the center of the spiritual reality is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. God. Bhagavan. And that Supreme Personality of Godhead is the center of everything in the spiritual sky. And everyone is related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in some relationships. That also have been very specifically described. They're known as four different kinds of relationship, like Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya and Madhur. Everyone is related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead either as a servant or as a friend, as the father or mother, or as lover. Like, he is the supreme male and his devotee can be a female and develop a relationship with him. So these are the four positive relationships with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we all, every one of us, are related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in some way or other. So the spiritual master very systematically leads us to that understanding. And so in simple words we can say that he provides us with the informations about God and he leads us to develop our loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of God. So at this point I will invite questions if you have any. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Yes. Okay, right. Yeah.
If everybody can hear what his person is?
Okay, I'm sorry, I just gave my presentation sitting down. I don't know, probably it would have been better if I stood up and spoke. Yeah? Anyway, at least I can answer the questions standing up. The question is, how do you make out, how do you recognize that the spiritual master is bona fide, or spiritual master is genuine or not? Right? That was.
No, like he has got a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like varying degrees of knowledge and everything.
Right.
How do you find out whether you identified the right person or not?
Yeah. So how do you identify that you have come across the right person or not? Well, the first thing is that you have to recognize that whether he is providing with spiritual information. Like if you go to a spiritual teacher and he gives you just material things, then will it serve the purpose? Obviously not. Right? So the spiritual teacher must provide spiritual information. So that's the first thing. Now if that happens, like if the person is providing with spiritual information, you are on the right track. Now, it's not that like you have just you have the option of selecting only one spiritual master. Like fine, somebody is guiding you on your spiritual path. If you, in course of your spiritual progress, if you come across somebody who can provide you with more information and you feel that you can enrich yourself by his guidance, then fine, approach him, take shelter of him. And in this way, you will continue to make spiritual progress. The only thing is that at the very beginning, you have to be clear about this one point. That the person who is teaching you on the spiritual subject matter is well informed about the spiritual reality and can provide you with the information. Right? So that's why I said that at the beginning of the quest, spiritual search, one has to be completely convinced about this difference between material and spiritual. Beyond this material, there is a spiritual reality. And then only the search can begin. Otherwise, one will be delving only in the material realm. Like nowadays we find, sometimes people approach a spiritual master with material objective. Now, one may approach a spiritual master with material objective. There is nothing wrong, because if the person is materially motivated, he will. But a qualified spiritual master will make him transcend the material platform and bring him to the spiritual platform. And in summary, I will say that ultimately one has his intelligence, and you have to use your intelligence and see for yourself whether the person is capable of providing the information. And another consideration is, if you are not aware of, if you are not so well aware of the subject, then approach somebody who is and ask him for guidance, how to select, how to find a spiritual teacher. Like for example, when you go to a school, you don't decide the school, you don't select the school for yourself when you are not properly informed. Your parents actually select the good school for you. But then gradually when you grow up, When it's a matter of going to the university, then you decide yourself which university you will opt for. So similarly in spiritual life, we may begin with the guidance by taking the guidance from others, but then at some point we have to make our decision of which course we will take or which personality we'll surrender ourselves to. Yes.
Spiritual master also looks at the qualifications of a student or not?
Yes, yes. Spiritual master also looks at the qualification, and the qualification is sincerity. That is the only qualification, that the person must be sincere. He doesn't have to be a PhD or, he may be illiterate, but if he's sincere about spiritual progress, then a bona fide spiritual master will accept him. Thank you. So, any other questions? Yes. In simple words, surrender means, first of all, accepting his authority, and then submitting himself for guidance. That means one gives up his independence. For example, when you go to a school, what do? You have to submit yourself to the teachers. You can't assume a role that you know better than the teacher. Then you will not learn anything. So one has to submit to the teacher and receive the information that the teacher is providing. And then he may have questions. If he doesn't understand, then the student may question. And in this respect, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying that the way to approach that process is tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena shevaya. So first thing is pranipatena, that means in a humble state of mind, submitting oneself to the authority of the teacher. And then pariprashnena, prashna means question, and pariprashnena means sincere inquiry, not just haphazard questions. But the questions must be motivated by sincere inquiry. I don't understand this. Please, can you explain why you said this? Or what is the reason behind this statement? What it actually is? And sevaya, service. Then upadekshanti te jnanam. The spiritual master then imparts the knowledge unto the student, unto the disciple. And jnanina satta darshina. He can impart the knowledge because he has the knowledge. One who doesn't have the knowledge, he cannot possibly impart the knowledge. So that is the meaning of surrender. Finds the qualified teacher and submits himself to be educated by him. Okay, any other question?
Knowledge then comes from the student.
Yeah. The knowledge, that's a very good point. Please. It's a very good point here that the knowledge comes to him. And it's true. The knowledge, but knowledge, again, this knowledge, the spiritual knowledge, unlike material knowledge, doesn't get transmitted through intellect. It is transmitted in the heart, because with our intellect, with our brains, we can receive only material information, but the spiritual information is transmitted through the heart. Tene brahmarida adikavai muihanti jat surayah. This brahmarida, the transcendental knowledge, was imparted in the heart of Lord Brahma by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and that's how it's flowing through the disciplic succession.
The Krishna Rishis, they used to ask the ask that question to the students coming to learn the Upanishad. This is the first and the foremost condition.
Right, right, that's true. Yeah. And also it's important to note here, Upanishad. Upanishad. Meaning sitting at the feet of the spiritual master, one receives the knowledge. That's why it's Upanishad. The knowledge that has been received sitting near the lotus feet of a self-realized soul, the spiritual master. Thank you.
Students of bhakti knowledge, they do not follow this.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, there are two different realms altogether. Like, spiritual realm is beyond our material sense perception. That's why it's called Adhokshaja. Adhokshaja means beyond sense perception. So this knowledge is beyond our sense perception. Therefore, the only means, only sense that can perceive this information is hearing, Shruti. Therefore, the Veda, another name of the Vedas is Shruti. The hearing, it's only through hearing from a bona fide source can we receive this information. And then Smriti, then it is retained in memory. So these are the two aspects of the Vedic transmission, Shruti and Smriti. Yes?
I guess when everyone's quest for guidance, we come across many, I guess, God men, or yogis, or sadhus. Many, a lot of people claim that I can give you enlightenment, I can give you direction, I can give you what you need to know. And many times I've seen that a lot of them achieving that. So why is there a prevalence of these kinds of persons in our quest for guidance, and how do we learn to avoid them?
Yeah. Why? The first answer to that why is, you know, ignorance in the people about the subject matter that they are actually searching for. The quest for the subject, when it doesn't have proper information about what the subject is and what to expect, then they are open to be deceived. That's one thing. Another thing is that the individuals, those who are, you know, actually in the spiritual domain, many unscrupulous people have infiltrated, or rather infiltrated the spiritual realm. And it's actually very interesting. In the Vedas, it has been pointed out that this age of Kali is actually the age of quarrel and deception. And in this age, everyone is susceptible to be cheated or cheater. The age of cheaters and the cheated. And since the spiritual realm is very... the information about the spiritual realm is not enough or is not sufficient. People are mostly ignorant about what to look for. They become exposed to all kinds of cheating. And what to do, like this is this age of Kali, and where we are talking about dharma, but we have to remember also this is the age of adharma. Like adharma actually prevails. That's why it's so important that the dharma is properly established. Now how dharma is recognized? Dharma is recognized by four principles: austerity, mercy, cleanliness and truthfulness. Dharma stands on those four pillars. And when these four pillars of dharma breaks, then meat-eating, intoxication, illicit sex and gambling become prevalent. So that's the age of Kali. Now we can see that the people, those who are promoting dharma, whether they are promoting these principles of dharma. At least we can see the pillars of dharma, recognize the pillars of dharma in this way. No meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. So if somebody is, instead of promoting the rejection of these, rather promotes these activities, then something is terribly wrong. And that's, as I said, like the first and foremost consideration is proper information. We have to have proper information. We have to educate people with proper information. And that's another unfortunate thing. Like our spiritual life, there is no education in the schools and college and universities. Nowhere, even in the families, there is hardly any kind of cultivation of this knowledge is going on. So everyone is groping in the darkness, not really knowing what to look for. And that is why, you know, the saints in this age are not recognized. See what they did to Jesus Christ. He came to deliver the world and they tried to crucify him. And these are the unfortunate state of affairs in this age. Any other questions? We have a few more minutes. Okay. Yeah.
And we just wanted to get some feedback so that for future conferences we can improve the more coordination with lectures, that would be a for what the participants are interested in. So if you wouldn't mind taking a few minutes and filling it out, we would appreciate it.
I beg your pardon? How to preach? Yeah. Spirituality to the cheaters. Oh, I'm sorry. To the children. Yes, very good. Very good. You see, the first teachers to the children are the parents. So parents themselves have to practice it. And that's the best way to start the teaching. And then the parents can guide them gradually. Like, what is right and what is wrong? Teach them how to discriminate. And in this way, you know, like, so the first consideration is that the parents themselves have to be spiritually motivated. Today, one of the major problem of this world is that the parents are not really citing the right examples. Most of the cases, like, you know, in the Western countries, broken homes, you know, single parents, you know. Like, what do you expect the children to grow up to be like? You know? And so the parents have a great responsibility towards their children. And at the same time, one more point I wanted to make. The spiritual institutions also can make facilities for children to get educated. Like, say, Sunday schools or, you know, some sort of such activities. Yes, please. Yeah, fine. There's nothing wrong. At least they're praying to God. even for some material objective, if they at least accept God and submit to Him, that itself is a positive progress. So they have to be provided with the proper information that, look, you're praying to God, but you have to prepare yourself. If you don't prepare, actually God helps those who help themselves. So we have to provide them with that information also. And I tell you, when one sincerely prays to God, God does respond. God does respond. I have seen many, many instances. I have heard experiences, amazing experiences from different individuals, that how, because of their prayers, how the prayers have been answered by God. So, thank you all very much.
The people pray God because God responds.
Yes, right.
And
right.
There is a method how to pray.
Yeah.
Which is in different Vedas.
Yes. Yes. And at least the parents can teach them how to pray to begin with. Good. Yes. Thank you. Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah, 5 minutes.
Okay, anybody has any other questions? Swami, you will be here until tomorrow, Swami?
Yeah, I'll be here until tomorrow.
So, in this session, the afternoon session, I'm not here to be
here. Yeah, I'll be around, but I won't be giving any other session. This was the...
You have very nicely explained us your spiritual aspect.
Thank you. Thank you, Swami.
Thank you for coming. Please give the hand.